Picture a world where the wealthiest 1% own more than the bottom 90% combined, where elections cost billions, yet policies ignore what most people actually want, where democracy exists in name, but not in practice. You don't need to imagine it. You're living in it. This isn't conspiracy theory. It's documented reality. Since World War II, a small class of corporate executives, financial elites, and their political servants have quietly restructured society to serve themselves. Adam Smith called them masters of mankind and condemned their vile maxim, all for ourselves, nothing for others. Today's masters operate through multinational corporations and financial institutions that have orchestrated what Citigroup analysts frankly describe as a plutonomy, an economy powered by and for the wealthy few, while everyone else struggles in what they call the global precariat. The question isn't whether this system exists, but how it became so normalized that we barely notice it anymore. Here's an uncomfortable truth. Most intellectuals throughout history haven't spoken truth to power. They've provided cover for it. When we think of intellectuals, we imagine brave dissidents like the Dreyfusards defending the falsely accused Alfred Dreyfus in 1898. But they were the minority, viciously attacked by mainstream thinkers as dangerous radicals. During World War I, Germany's leading intellectuals signed a manifesto supporting their government's conduct, while American progressives celebrated the war as proof that intelligent men could manage human affairs, even as they were being manipulated by British propaganda. The pattern repeats across history. Conformist intellectuals who rationalize official crimes get honored, while critics get marginalized or imprisoned. Russell, Debs, and Luxembourg went to jail for opposing World War I. Nelson Mandela stayed on the U.S. terrorist list until 2008. Soviet dissidents were praised by Americans, while American dissidents were ignored. The term dissident itself is applied selectively, never to critics of U.S. policy, always to critics of enemy states. When Hezbollah commander Imad Mughniyeh was assassinated in 2008, U.S. officials declared, "The world is a better place without this man." But whose world? Malaysia Airlines Flight 17's downing over Ukraine in 2014, killing 298, dominated headlines as an outrage of unspeakable proportions. Yet when the USS Vincennes shot down Iran Air Flight 655 in Iranian airspace in 1988, killing 290, including 66 children, there was virtual silence. The commander received the Legion of Merit, while Reagan blamed Iran. In 1985, editors voted the Akil Loro hijacking, which killed one person, the top terrorism story. That same year, Israel bombed Tunisia, killing 75 civilians, UN condemned armed aggression, US labeled legitimate response, and a CIA-authorized car bombing outside a Beirut mosque killed 80, mostly women and girls. The pattern is clear. Terrorism is violence committed by people we don't like. Torture wasn't a Bush-era aberration. For 60 years, the CIA spent $1 billion annually developing a torture paradigm, focusing on psychological breakdown, methods that appeared virtually unchanged at Abu Ghraib. Reagan crafted diplomatic reservations excluding CIA techniques from the UN Convention Against Torture. Obama largely continued these policies, shipping prisoners to Bagram instead of Guantanamo. Experienced interrogator Matthew Alexander concluded harsh methods were counterproductive and may have caused as many U.S. soldier deaths as civilians killed in 9/11 as foreign fighters came to Iraq specifically reacting to Guantanamo and Abu Ghraib abuses. Democracy sounds wonderful until you realize elites support it only when it serves their interests. Research shows American policy overwhelmingly reflects elite preferences while ignoring majority opinions. This isn't democracy malfunctioning. It's working exactly as designed. The political system transformed in the 1970s when manufacturing profits declined and Bretton Woods collapsed. The response was financialization, deregulation, and offshoring, policies that concentrated wealth in the top 0.1% while most income stagnated. This created a vicious cycle. Economic power bought political power, which changed laws to generate more economic power. Elections became prohibitively expensive, with the 2012 race costing over $2 billion in mostly corporate funding. Banks receive $83 billion annually in taxpayer subsidies through too-big-to-fail policies, yet propaganda blames teachers and immigrants for economic problems. As Dewey noted, politics has become the shadow cast on society by big business. American power peaked in 1945, controlling half the world's wealth. By 1970, that fell to 25% as economies recovered and decolonization progressed. Yet ambition never adjusted. Obama expanded military operations beyond Bush, with special forces now in 147 countries. This decline is self-inflicted. In the 1970s, planners deliberately shifted toward financialization and offshoring, concentrating wealth that bought political power, a failure by design benefiting designers while harming everyone else. South America has achieved unprecedented independence after 500 years, forming organizations excluding the U.S. entirely. When China declared independence in 1949, Washington saw it as losing what America owned by right. The domino theory wasn't fear of communist expansion, but rational concern that successful independent development would spread beyond U.S. control. What happens when declining powers refuse their diminished role? History suggests turbulent transitions ahead. In January 2015, the doomsday clock moved to 3 minutes before midnight, closer than any time in 30 years. Two existential threats drove this: nuclear weapons and climate change. We've survived nuclear annihilation through sheer luck. Russian officer Stanislav Petrov dismissed a false missile alert. Submarine commander Vasily Arkhipov prevented nuclear torpedo launches during the Cuban Missile Crisis. Nuclear security expert Bruce Blair reports numerous incidents where actual launch orders replaced exercise orders, with disaster averted only by human intervention. Current U.S. doctrine pursues strategic primacy, missile defense systems functioning as first strike weapons, with NATO expansion escalating tensions. This is insane. Nuclear winter from a first strike could destroy the attacker without retaliation. Meanwhile, climate catastrophe accelerates. The Paris Agreement relies on voluntary plans because the Republican Senate blocked binding treaties. Every 2016 Republican presidential candidate denied climate science. Celebrating energy independence reveals our moral calculus. Profits today outweigh future generations. We face a species-level test. Can we overcome institutional short-termism before it destroys us? Magna Carta's Civil Rights Foundation is crumbling. Its companion, the Charter of the Forest, protected commons, collectively maintained resources for future generations, until capitalism destroyed this by the 17th century. Garrett Hardin's Tragedy of the Commons falsely claims unowned resources inevitably face destruction, ignoring centuries of successful collective management. Worldwide struggles persist. Bolivia resisted water privatization. El Salvador fights destructive mining. Since the Industrial Revolution, advertising, what Veblen termed fabricating wants, directs people toward fashionable consumption while atomizing individuals. Post-Civil War amendments extended personhood to African Americans, but slavery returned through criminalization, what Douglas Blackman called slavery by another name. By the 1970s, neoliberal restructuring rendered much of the black population superfluous, triggering mass recriminalization. Meanwhile, courts granted corporations full personhood with greater rights due to their scale and immortality. Under free trade agreements, corporations can sue nations while individuals cannot. Habeas corpus faces assault through rendition. Due process now means merely internal executive deliberations for drone assassinations. Presumption of innocence means counting all military-age males in strike zones as combatants unless posthumously proven innocent. Power extracts wealth upward while directing blame downward, celebrating torture as necessity while calling resistance terrorism, risking nuclear annihilation and climate catastrophe for quarterly profits. Yet understanding this system is the first step toward changing it. History shows that every major advance in human freedom, from abolishing slavery to ending apartheid, came from people who refused to accept that power defines reality. The intellectuals who matter risk everything to speak truth. The movements that succeed build alternatives rather than asking permission. We stand 3 minutes from midnight on the doomsday clock, with the commons being privatized, rights being shredded, and democracy being hollowed out. But we also stand at a moment of possibility, when more people recognize the system's failures and search for alternatives. The question isn't whether the current order will end, it's whether we'll build something better or let it collapse into barbarism. Your move.